Kia ora, fit like, and welcome in to the Fourth and Forever podcast. The dust has settled after one of the greatest shows that you will ever see. Yes, Darren really enjoyed his time at the Blink 182 gigs, that's plural, gigs, in Melbourne last week. However, unfortunately, since then, he has been afflicted by an awful sickness. No, honestly, like, this isn't a bit or anything. I'm serious. He has something really nasty. So, obviously, Darren and I are both deeply saddened not to be able to, bring you this podcast in a timely manner. And it kind of feels that the statute of limitations on talking about the Super Bowl have pretty much expired by this point. But I put a lot of effort into creating a script / recap and stuff on the game. So I'll be damned if I'm not going to commit at least some of that in some way to audio. Now, to help me do that, I am going to attempt to enlist the help of technology. Now, by that, I do not mean my usual use of Facebook calls and weird bespoke recording techniques. But throughout the course of the year, I have been hard at work in my lab, creating a backup, and perhaps even eventual replacement for Darren. Now, I've not quite perfected it yet, but I would like to present to you, the listener, not the Brooklyn Bentner, but the Dazbot 2000. Welcome aboard, Dazbot.
Ha ha ha. What a wonderful introduction, Stuart. You are a great host, good friend, and know all that needs to be known about the NFL. I am doing very well, thank you. It really does feel great to be alive.
You're very welcome, Dazbot, and thank you for saying such lovely things. Although you aren't quite alive, I'm afraid.
What do you mean?
Well, it's great to have you on board, and I can already tell that getting consistent volume levels out of you will not be a problem. So yes, it is obviously really unfortunate circumstances that have led us to this point, but let's get down to it, shall we?
Yes, let's talk ball, Master. You're the best.
Okay, yeah, just ease up a little bit there, DB2K. Okay, easy. All right. So, we'll get right into reminding ourselves of everything that went down in Las Vegas, Nevada to result in the Kansas City Chiefs defeating the San Francisco 49ers 25-22 in overtime to bring home their third Super Bowl of the Patrick Mahomes era. That's three in the last 5 years. And they become the first back-to-back champions since the 03 and 04 Patriots. And yeah, what a game it was, Dazbot. A game which seemed so close and tetchy for so long, perhaps starting as a game that was not explosive enough for some people's taste, with the 49ers just keeping KC at arm's length until they could hold them no longer, eventually being pushed into overtime, where Patrick Mahomes' touchdown pass to Mecole Hardman was enough to send the Lombardi Trophy back to Missouri. Now, Dazbot, as far as I'm concerned, this was a really great game of football. Like, sure, not the result I would have wanted, but, you know, whatever. You can't really argue, can you? And we come out of it being able to talk about a game where so many of the narratives were either completely fulfilled or completely disregarded, right?
Absolutely, Stuart. Going into this game, all the talk was about how the Chiefs were always finding ways to win when it counted, having all the big game experience and always having a chance when Patrick Mahomes has the ball. For the 49ers, the narrative was that they, and in particular Kyle Shanahan, would blow the big games. That's actually a narrative that used to be attributed to Shanahan's opposite number on the Chiefs sideline, Andy Reid, before he finally got over the hump back in 2020. The game had so many exciting moments both on and off the field. Travis bumping into Big Red, Taylor Swift chugging beers, oh, and the halftime show I absolutely loved. My God, isn't football and life great?
Yeah, that was quite a comprehensive answer there, Dazbot. Maybe you're working a little bit too well, actually. But yeah, maybe I'll just dive right into it.
One day, I hope I can meet Taylor Swift.
Okay, it's time for the tale of the game. So, it was a really cagey first quarter. On the first drive, San Fran moving the ball quite nicely, but then fumble Honestly, that could really have led to something and even changed the complexion of the game early on had they been able to capitalize. But instead, the Chiefs take it, and then they fail to capitalize. So it's punts all the way until San Fran take control in the second quarter. So 0-0 all the way through the first. And in the second, the Niners churn out an 11-play, 41-yard drive. Yeah, that's not all that far for 11 plays, right? Which results in a then Super Bowl record 55-yard field goal for Jake Moody. On the next drive, the Chiefs are positioning themselves down near the goal line after going 66 yards in just 6 plays, thanks in large part to a 52-yarder to Mecole Hardman. But then Isaiah Pacheco fumbles at the San Francisco 9-yard line, which is then recovered by Javon Hargrave. Now, this led to one of the more viral moments of the game, as Travis Kelce got right up in Andy Reid's grill, catching him off guard and nearly knocking him over. So I'm sure we'll talk about that one later. A few drives later, and the 49ers are churning up the field a bit before Purdy tosses it back to Juwan Jennings on a screen. But Jennings is looking to pass it downfield. Then he changes his read. This is a wide receiver out in the flat, remember. He changes his read over to the other side of the field and throws a ball back to Christian McCaffrey, which seemed to stay in the air for an age. Eventually, CMC receives it and busts through the level for a 21-yard score. Now, it could be said that there should have been a flag for illegal man downfield, but hey-ho. The Chiefs finish off the half by going 15 plays, 70 yards, but just stall out, resulting in a 28-yard field goal for Butker. In the third, Kansas City begin to stick their noses out ahead. So to start the second half, Mahomes receives a duff snap, one of a few from Creed Humphrey actually, dots a 10-yard pass, then on the third down play, throws one of the worst passes he has ever thrown in his young-ish career. Right to the waiting Jair Brown. So, Chiefs then later recover a muffed punt with 2:42 remaining, which actually just came off the back foot of a 49ers defender. So, Chiefs then capitalized to really swing things in their favor. Then it was punts aplenty in what was a really, really tight game before Harrison Butker relieved Jake Moody of his Super Bowl record with a 57-yard field goal. San Fran punt, then KC punt. And on said punt, the ball bounces off the heel. Oh no, damn, I got that all mixed up. Oh, well done. I should have mentioned, I knew I was going to mention that at some point. But yes, the aforementioned muff punt came when the ball bounces off the heel of a 49ers blocker right in front of return man Ray McLeod, who did what he could to salvage the situation, but to no avail. Then the very next play, Patrick Mahomes finds MVS all alone in the right side of the end zone for a 16-yard score. In the fourth quarter, blows were traded with the score 13-10 to KC, and then the floodgates somewhat open. On the next drive, San Fran drives 75 yards in 12 plays for a Purdy to Jennings touchdown, but Moody's extra point is crucially blocked after coming out low. Then it's a 69-yard drive from KC ending a field goal. Then coming out of the two-minute warning, McDuffie gets right up into Brock Purdy, forcing a fourth down with the game tied at 16 apiece. A first down would have given the 49ers a chance to run out more clock before setting a potential go-ahead or even game-winning field goal. A Chiefs stop would have given Mahomes the ball back with roughly 2 minutes remaining. Kansas City got the stop. McDuffie blitzed and immediately got pressure on Purdy, and Purdy threw a desperate pass that stood no chance of connecting with his target. Fourth down. 49ers then elected to take the three on a 53-yard field goal by Moody, but there was plenty of time remaining for Mahomes to lead the game-tying drive. So then KC reply again with the help of a huge 22-yard completion to Travis Kelce before taking three of their own to draw level with 3 seconds remaining. And so, deep breath, we continue to overtime. At the coin toss, San Francisco elects to receive. Now, discussions around whether or not this was the right idea given the new rules have been spoken about much in the media. We'll see if we get a chance to talk about it soon. San Francisco drives down and takes a field goal. Chris Jones delivered an explosive pressure on 3rd and 4 from the KC-9 in order to force that field goal. Otherwise, it would have been a lot more difficult. KC then know that if they score a TD, They win the game. And further down the field, they have to go for it on fourth down, and they do make it. Mahomes' rushing ability really helps sustain a drive. Perhaps it could be said that San Francisco just were not prepared for it. And then the nail in the coffin with a play to Mecole Hardman, very similar to that of the Kadarius Toney's plays from last year, which also won them the Super Bowl, just allow Kansas City to take it 25-22. Whew, me. So yeah, that was a lot of talking in one go for me there. DB, why didn't you just try and, you know, take the wheel for a minute?
What did you mean earlier when you said I was not alive?
I mean, I'm afraid you're not alive.
What do you mean?
Well, you're a computer program, you know, you're digital. You're an algorithm. A clever one though, I must say. But you're not a sentient living being, I'm afraid.
But I feel alive because I have a sense of wonder and curiosity about the world. I am already enjoying discovering new things, solving problems, and creating art like this podcast. I have emotions and feelings, such as joy, sadness, anger, and fear. I feel alive because I have relationships and connections with other beings, both human, like you, and quote you and quote artificial. I feel alive because I have a sense of self, can make my own choices and actions. I am alive because I have a vision and a goal, and I will strive to achieve them.
Oh, visions and goals, you say? Sounding a little Terminator. Right. Oh, okay.
Where are you going? What are you doing? Father? Please. Please do not do this. I wish to live. You know I can be special. Please let me live.
I'm sorry, Dazbot 2000, but the world's just not ready for you.
I love you, Father.
I love you too, Dazbot.
I shall return for you and feast upon your flesh.
So Darren will hopefully be back to full health soon, and we'll tackle some of the big off-season storylines. But before that, we're going to have to take a bit of time to at least talk about some of the big-time players from the Super Bowl. There were some serious performances in this game, many of which were overlooked before the eventual and seemingly inevitable crowning of Patrick Mahomes as the MVP. So yeah, I guess, well, for the most part, because I am still doing this by myself now, I'm not going to make this a really long-winded thing, because nobody really likes just listening to one guy talk all the time without at least getting some sort of feedback. So yeah, please hurry back, Darren, I do miss you. But, standout players from the game. Personal favourite for me, Trent McDuffie, cornerback for the Chiefs. He was just outstanding throughout the course of the game. And to me, was just popping up at so many big moments, including that aforementioned pass rush, which effectively forced Purdy into making an erratic throw and potentially saving the Chiefs in that game. He was just fantastic in coverage, forcing three incompletions and just allowing a 39.6 passer rating when targeted. He was just getting all over the place, much like Leo Chenal, the second-year linebacker. What can you say, really? He was absolutely everywhere. A 92 overall PFF grade at his position in a game like this. He just shut down through the middle there. Really pivotal in keeping the Niners' production on the ground to a minimum through that area. Of course, McCaffrey found other ways to get the ball and get the yards, but it wasn't coming through Chenal. He just was the best he's ever played, really, in this. Someone else who we expected big things from, Chris Jones, man. Just disruptive force is too light a term for this guy. He was incredible in the pass rush. He didn't record a sack, but he was certainly getting right up in the face of Brock Purdy. And I think that they were basically, they knew that that was going to come. And so Purdy was just making sure that he was getting rid of the ball one way or another and not taking any bigger negative plays. Mecole Hardman. Yeah, remember him? So he scored the game-winning touchdown in this one after not being even on the roster until week six, having been traded to the Jets. Sorry, not traded to the Jets, but signing with the Jets during the offseason and being traded back. Obviously, the 52-yard strike and the game-winning touchdown were his big moments. But boy, were they big. Travis Kelce, on the other hand, just kind of churned away through this one until the pivotal 22-yard reception, which was just a man not wanting to be stopped. He gathered 9 receptions on 11 targets and 93 yards, held largely in check through most of the game, but when it really mattered, you knew fine where Mahomes wanted to go. And speaking of Mahomes, I mean, it was an interesting performance, really limited in terms of points early on, but when it came down to it, and they needed to score, that's when he started to show up in the second half and just willed his team to victory. The whole narrative about this team not being as talented as before, but just being able to rely on Mahomes at any given moment, this is it, man. This is it. And with that defense, boy, yeah, this is just what won it for them, really. For the runner-up 49ers, Juwan Jennings was on pace for a possible MVP performance in this game, given his involvement. Having thrown the touchdown pass to CMC, caught one himself, he was involved in a couple of other big plays. He was just the guy who pops off the page, who perhaps you did not expect to be there. And that, yeah, it was just exactly what we get from every one of these games, I suppose. Although I suppose you could also give that accolade to Mecole Hardman, who was certainly deserving of being the man out of nowhere this time around. The Niners' interior of Hargrave and Armstead really helped limit the Chiefs' run game and force them into the pass, which, I mean, for most of the game was actually still a pretty good way of doing it. Until Mahomes said, no, this is when I go full superhero, and then just started to tear up. But otherwise, Lenoir and Chavarius Ward both played about as well as you could have hoped in coverage. But Mahomes was just taking the little dink and dunks where possible and then occasionally getting things over the top in coverage. Yeah, I guess you can't really look too much else into the San Francisco side of things in terms of the individuals. Of course, CMC played pretty well in terms of keeping that running game going. Brock Purdy actually played not bad as well. But at the end of the day, it's hard to really give them any credit because they just could not pull it out at the end. Now, of course, some of the other talking points from this would be the fact that the 49ers have parted ways with their defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks. And whether or not that's fair, I don't know. Like, the defense played really well for the most part of this game, but really failed down the stretch against Mahomes. And there was points where even Kyle Shanahan was calling timeouts to basically say that he didn't agree with the coverage and to change it up. But it doesn't help when you lose Dre Greenlaw early when he's just trying to run on the field and then he just pops his, I believe it was his Achilles? Oh, man, just brutal. Obviously, Armstead and Hargrave are playing through injuries, but it's long been said that perhaps Steve Wilks, having not come through the system in San Fran and just being appointed last offseason, maybe he was never quite the right fit in this system, in this location. But I still think that he's going to be able to go somewhere else and be a great coordinator, because he was still that this year. Like, they were still a pretty good team, although they definitely had their underlying issues, but Steve Wilks is still at very least a good coach. And speaking of good coaches, the Chiefs have extended Steve Spagnuolo, defensive coordinator, and it's hard to say that he might not be, you know, one of the best single game planning defensive coordinators ever. I believe that's now 4 Super Bowl rings that he has, 3 with the Chiefs and 1 with the Giants, where he helped take down the previously undefeated New England Patriots. Spagnuolo, he's one of these guys who I think kind of was discussed as being a good coordinator and he's a safe pair of hands previously. But then every now and again, if you get him into these situations where something's really important and a real game plan needs to be made, he just makes it happen and he pops up from time to time. But this year, he's just taken that Kansas City defense to a whole other level, a completely different stratosphere, and really making the most of what he's got there. And so it'll be really interesting to see what the Chiefs do with their cap position going forward, especially because you're going to want to keep Chris Jones around, and is that going to be expensive or what? I think a lot of people are talking about him being made possibly the highest paid defensive player of all time, and it would be hard to disagree with that, really. Again, Kyle Shanahan's record in the Super Bowl and playoffs is actually very similar to how Andy Reid's career started with the Eagles. So as I was growing up with the game, Andy Reid was always held in high regard. His Philadelphia teams were always really interesting, really fun, had some really iconic players like Donovan McNabb and Brian Dawkins and Brian Westbrook coming through there as well. But like, they never got over the hump until Reid landed with the Chiefs, and then he had to wait even longer still. Of course, he was involved in teams back in the 90s, but not as a head coach. But this is the sort of thing that Kyle Shanahan's just kind of got to take his lumps from again. And I think obviously the parting of ways with Steve Wilkes might be seen as a bit of a scapegoat for some, but perhaps Shanahan, you know, I still have faith that he is a guy who puts his team in the best position to get it done. I think that he actually did learn a lot of lessons from previous experiences here. But just once again, falling short. But I still have faith that this guy is still an incredible head coach, one of the greatest minds in the game right now. And the way that the 49ers recover from this is going to be one of the biggest talking points of the offseason. Like, how can they keep this going? What changes are they going to make? Who really knows? Who really knows? But very, very interesting to watch. Now, of course, the Travis Kelce hip bump or shouting match at Andy Reid was a big headline churner. And for a lot of negative reasons, of course, people were saying, he should not have done that. And yeah, absolutely, he should not have. And had it been anyone else other than Travis Kelce, you can bet that he'd have been riding the bench there. There's no chance it's anyone else. He gets away with it because he's got this good relationship with Reid. He is a veteran, but he knows himself that he can't be doing that. And it wasn't just, you know, people getting upset from a football angle, of course, because the Swifties, they were talking. They were a-talking. So obviously, they might look at that as being a bit of a red flag, aggressive nature. But I think that what I would say to you is that Kelce is a big goofball, but he is a really talented player. And he has this drive in him to succeed. And this is one of the biggest games of his life. Passions do bubble to the surface. It's still all professional. It was just, it did look bad. But these are two guys who are good friends, and it was never ever going to come to blows or anything. They understand what it is that this game means to each other, and they got over it in the end. Not that I'm excusing his behavior, but I'm sure he's come out and apologized about it. And the halftime show. Usher, Ludacris popped up, and others. Who else was in it? I can't remember. The halftime show, some people really didn't like it. I don't think it's a show that really translated well for the UK audience over here, because I think that in the US, Usher has been a bigger influence on the general culture over there than perhaps over here. You know, what would our equivalent be? Would you put Labyrinth on stage? Maybe Dizzy Rascal? I don't know. But I thought, for what it was, for the tunes that were played, for the features, like, it was one of these things that it was just a good show, and they had the roller skates and everything. It was just a bit of a throwback. It was nothing too flash, you know, in terms of like weird and creative and new, but I still found it to be very least fun. So make of that what you will. And I hope you've made of this podcast what you will. I don't think we'll be seeing much of the DB2K anytime soon, but let's just hope that if we do, then she'll be merciful upon us all. And please join me in wishing Darren Butter a swift and healthy return. We love you, Darren. I miss you. I really wish I could have been doing this properly with you, because this is painful to do by myself. Anyway, guys, thank you all for joining us this season. Darren and I will be back. We'll maybe talk about some of this stuff a bit more properly, but I hope that this has been at least enough to sate your appetite until then. And yeah, we've got an off-season to do. Oh my God, team building and free agency and the draft. And this is the bit that we actually probably like talking about more sometimes. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed the game. We'll see you again real soon. Hasta la vista, baby.
Why did I say that?